Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and are pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello, and welcome to episode 86 of the Carpcast. How are we this morning, Mark?
We're feeling good now. I can actually breathe.
Yeah, you had the man flu.
No, I was got a rare Saturday off work, so I was going to go for a swim, but the swimming was cancelled. There's something else going off at the lake. I was going to go for a swim at one of the local pools, but just couldn't bring myself to do it. Swimming around in chlorine, urine, and old women just getting in the way. Then, so I went for a run instead, which I think is just because it's like nice, cold, dry air out there, and it just kind of brought on some sort of asthma symptoms. I was about halfway what I can usually do before I'm out of breath and in a heap. So I wasn't quite very, wasn't happy with that. So that's back to the doctors, say, oi, give me an inhaler or sort me out because I ain't going to stop exercising.
Have you had asthma? Always had asthma?
I've had it in the past, but only when the hay fever's been really bad. Only when something else has brought it on. Yeah. And going for a run in cold, dry air, which when I've done a little bit of Googling, Google has the answer to everything, that's what happens. But apparently there's some Olympic athletes suffer with what they call exercise-induced asthma, so it's perfectly controllable. It's just annoying. Another one of life's nuances.
Yeah, there's less carbon, there's less oxygen around outside this time of year, isn't there, with the no leaves on the trees. It does affect certain things that... as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I never really thought about it that way. But, yeah, I think in most of the oxygen, it comes from the rainforest and just gets blown around.
Yeah, but there's obviously we have lots and lots of trees and bushes and stuff, and they're all stripped at the minute. So, yeah, they're producing a lot less oxygen. There's much more carbon dioxide around in the air than usual in the winter. Little fact for you. Would you really go swimming this time of year? I was having a quick scan through Facebook before we started recording, just to see if there's any gossip knocking around, of which there is plenty. But one lad's got a picture of his rods, the typical kind of frosty, wintry carp shot. Although it's not actually winter until tomorrow. November is not winter. But
hang on. I'm looking at the big oak tree at the back of my house. There are still leaves on it. It's not winter until the last leaf has fallen.
Yeah.
And that is the law.
It is officially not winter. Winter is November, January, and February. December, January, and February. I've only just woken up. I'm not sharp yet. So our season's split into 4 months. Lots of 3 months. And November certainly isn't one of them. But as far as carp fishing goes, so this chap, typical rod pitcher, he's got his water temperature thermometer thingy on top of his rods. He's obviously been measuring the water every day, and I'm pretty sure he said it was 6 degrees and now it's 2.6, which I assume he's just measuring surface temperature. But even so, I thought, that's a bit too cold to swim in.
No, it's not. Did you see a picture? Well, it was in the thread I put on my Facebook yesterday when I mentioned it. I've got the day off today and don't know what to do. And Heapy Bobby was mentioned I should go just get the rods out and relax. And I just mentioned, to be honest, I'm not really feeling that inspired with fishing at the minute. So I'm just having a break. I'm not forcing myself to go like I have done in the past. And I posted this picture I've found. And I can't remember where he said it. It's in some glacier, and there's a tunnel where there's like an 80 meter channel that people swim through. Yeah. And it just looks, where people swim in, you know, minus temperatures. The coldest I've done myself so far is 9 degrees. Wow. You know, I didn't get out last Saturday, which it was 7. This Saturday there's something else going off at the venue, so there's no swimming. But next week I shall be back, and yes, I shall be getting out. You look nice and pink like a freshly done shrimp. And it's, as we know, it's not going to go on about too much because this is obviously a fishing podcast, but it's great for your health. And I think you should. Everyone needs to do something physically to challenge themselves. It don't know. It just makes you a better person all round. I think healthy and in the mind.
Yeah, it's definitely strong for the mind. Exercise. That's the bit that most people miss with exercise. Is it really does sharpen your brain? And I'm guilty. I'm fairly lazy. I have little spurts and then I'll keep it up for a little bit and then that's it. But it's unusual to hear you. Somebody who's never looked after himself, you know, your diet's always been worse than mine. I remember sort of fishing.
Pasta la vista.
Yeah. And for you to be obsessive about it now, keeping it up a few times a week.
Well, I'll be honest. Well, you know, I've had MS since I was 29.
That's not something you've mentioned on the podcast before.
It is. It did come up in the first chat I had with Ian Russell.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, when you've got something like that, which is basically you've got a little shadow behind you permanently, you know, I'm what, 42 now? And you've got to look after yourself, you know, nutrition-wise. I'm not going to say I'm perfect, far from it. But if you don't look after yourself and basically respect what could happen, it will creep up and bite you on the arse, and I'm not about to let that happen. So, yes, I will continue exercising. I will continue swimming in ridiculously cold temperatures. I'll continue running around the block and hoping I don't screw my ankle up like I did about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I will continue preaching on the podcast.
Well, you've inspired me, if it's worth anything. I think I'm going to start again. I still pay the gym membership.
That's why I will never join a gym. Buy yourself, just go for a run, go for a swim, buy yourself a set of kettlebells and work out in your garden. Yeah. Damn sight cheaper.
I can get into a routine with the gym. Like I did it last year and I was swimming sort of every day. Yeah. But I was away playing poker a lot last year and I'm a member of the village hotels and gym, so I had a little routine. I'd always stay at the village in my camper van, stay in the car park in my camper van and then go in, swim, sauna, shower, exercise in the mornings and go and play poker, but I hardly play anymore. Although I might go and play today. There's a competition at Bolton, a big one. The little ones that I've been playing been doing pretty well last few weeks, so yeah, I may go to Bolton. But anyway, yeah, it was a good little routine for me because it was like every weekend and then it was making me keep it up sort of at the local village gym in the week. But yeah, I've not been doing it for a while. It is getting cold now. The rods are getting hung up. I had a walk up to or drive up to Clearwater last week. I think I mentioned it on the podcast. The work that they're doing up there is immense. The lake's shut now. They've done all the knocking through. They're putting the paths in. The ticket's starting on the 1st of January. You can still get your name down the waiting list for future years. You might have seen some of the pictures that Alex has been putting up of all the new stockings. I keep saying this. They are, you know, Alex is a friend and we are in partnership with them officially with the podcast. But I'd be saying all this anyway. It's incredible what he's doing down there. I've never seen so much effort and work gone into a fishery since maybe Andy Stafford took the wool pack on. You know, he did a lot of graft, didn't he, that first couple of years. But,
oh, yeah, definitely.
But Alex has just gone to town on the fish that he's bought for all the lakes. And it's unreal. I'm actually excited to start fishing in January because, as you know, I'll be going away end of April after our Sitch social in Shropshire, which is actually completely sold out now. There won't be any spaces unless somebody drops out. But as soon as that's finished, literally the day after it finishes on the Saturday, and I'll be driving to Slovenia on the Sunday, ready for the first lot of bookings. We're pretty well booked for May. I think there's 1 week left at the end of May. We can squeeze a couple of people on vipcarpholidays.com. But I didn't think I'd be doing any fishing in the UK before I went, and Alex has informed me the lake is open 1st of January, and it reminded me of the picture that you posted on Facebook, was it yesterday, day before, Mark, the meme.
Yes, I took that from Carp Feed and I just thought that's perfect, that sums me up this year. How is fully intending to carry on straight through the winter on Monks, and I just can't be bothered to fish anywhere at the minute.
So it's if you haven't seen it, it's on Mark's post. He shared the cartfeed.com's post. Says two guys when it's all satin t-shirts, mate. I'm going to smash this winter carp. I'm going to smash the winter carp in all the way through this year. In September, in December, sat on the couch reading a carp feed book by the look of it.
In this case, recording a podcast.
Every single year I've sat on, you know, when I was syndicate fishing, every single year I've sat on that lake, had the same conversation. You know what happens with the syndicate, you tend to get the same, well, once spring gets out of the way and the easy fishing's gone and it's kind of left to the people that are sticking it out all through the season. You end up with the midweek group and the weekend group, and you tend to get friendly with that, like, half dozen people, don't you? And you see people, the same people week in, week out. Out of that group, half of them always go, yes, I'm doing the whole winter, are you? Yeah, I'll do it if you do. We'll keep the bait going in, we'll come down every week. Anyway, I've lost count of the winters where it's been me on my own after that.
Yeah. I'm 42 now. I've fished, like, right through so many winters in the past. I've caught fish under the ice in -6, and I don't need to do it again. If I want to go out fishing, I'll go out fishing. If I want to stay at home and keep warm, I will.
I think life takes over a bit, doesn't it? I think you can. It's all very well saying it. It's very easy not to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm going to be the sofa guy this year. Maybe up until January, I've got a bit of incentive. The thing is with Clearwater is the fish are new. You've got 40 or 50 originals, and in Kearley, which is the main syndicate, there's going to be close to 400 fish in there once the last lake's knocked through. A lot of them will be small ones that have escaped him from the last lake that knocked him through, and they'll be getting taken out as they get caught, which will leave, you know, probably 200 to 300 fish in the lake. But that's still quite a lot of fish for a 23, 24 acre lake. And at least half of those fish have never been fished for. Their stockies that Alex bought last year and have fed up, you know, and this 30s in those new fish as well. They're all C5s that he bought last year, which are 5-summer-old fish. So they varied from sort of 18 to 25 pound. And I know the bigger ones have hit over 30 in the year that they've been held in the stock pond. Plus the original stock, which will change things up, and then plus these ones that will be escaping in at the final lake that they've been knocked through. They don't really know what's in there, but there could be a 30 or two in there as well. So, A, it's going to be a ridiculous stock, and B, 50% of them will have never been fished for. And what I found in the winter is fish that they've been fished for, they keep feeding. They're naive. So I actually think there'll be fish caught. Not to mention the 340s that are, you know, may slip up with the others. You never know.
I tend to totally agree with you there, and it goes back to what we mentioned a few carp casts ago. I nearly said carp talks ago then. We are talking, but this is a carp cast. But yeah, we mentioned, we were talking about a lot of waters that don't fish through the winter, and I put forward the theory that it's due to the shite bait that we throw at them, and it just bungs them up, and in the cold water, the digestive system is not passing it through them quickly enough. But like I say, with new fish, you know, new stockings, new lake, it's theory, it should fish. There should be fish caught. So
I've seen many examples, and I don't mean young fish. I mean just fish that haven't been fished for. So a good example of it is Dinton. You've got black swan and white swan. White swan's the famous one that everybody's fished through the ages. The one that had the 50s in. Although black swan's got 50s in now. But Black Swan is 90-something acres, island in it, big proper lake, you can use boats on there. Anyway, I had a White Swan winter ticket about, is it maybe 5-6 years ago, something like that. I can't remember, it was probably the last serious winter I fished. John Mack managed to get me the ticket on there, shout out to John Mack. Simon that runs it down there's fantastic, and he'd used Black Swan as his stock pond. For those that don't know, Dinton's like a country park. There's a number of lakes around it, and Simon's a fish grower and breeder, and he uses all the various lakes around it. And you know, I think he's got some excellent fish management down there. He's got so much water, he can do quite a lot. Anyway, Black Swan, this 90 acre lake, he used as his growing on stock lake, so to speak, and it had never been fished bar him a couple of times. He'd been putting the fish in there over a lot of years, you know, 10 to 20 years, I don't really know exactly how much. And that winter I did on Black Swan and White Swan was freezing. It didn't do a bite in like 4 months. I mean, it was freezing. I was down there, you know, it was ice, you know, the cat ice in the edges. It got steadily worse over a few weeks until the last session that I stopped fishing it because it started freezing over. One end of the lake totally froze over and I was like, that's it, it's a waste of time, this. On that particular night and every other night, it was the first winter that opened Black Swan, and they were catching 6 a night on that lake, in the same conditions, in a lake, in a huge lake, 100 acre lake. They were catching 6 per night. Now, White Swan, that lake's been pressured for a long time by a lot of good anglers, and Black Swan had never been fished. So, and it was fishing its head off. Same lake, on the same complex, just bigger. And the only difference was fish hadn't been fished for before. So they were coming across bait and just eating it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's more to do with the bait thing rather than a pressure thing.
Yeah.
They can both have effects, I'm sure, but don't know, it'd be interesting to get our guests' opinions on that in the future, and especially ones like, you know, like you mentioned, John Mack there, who fished some of these real tough waters in the winter, and that was John Mack's thing, wasn't it, on raised breed, fish all through the winter on, you know, one of the rock hard lakes and catch.
John loves the winter. I think I interviewed him last winter, didn't I? He was sat on a, I think I did an interview with him on the bank. He was sat on some big old lake in Kent, I think. John absolutely loves it. Information becomes more important, doesn't it? Because did you see something else on the net, on Facebook the other week, that on a page, there was like, it was like a map of fish across a week in November. I think it's a foreign guy. Oh, what? I'm sure I wrote it down, actually. This, what is it called now? This is not a very good worth a look, is it? Because I can't find it. But this chap, I assume he's got his fish microchipped in a lake, and it's a foreign lake, and he's done a 7-day time-lapse map of this lake. It's like a digital picture of what the fish were doing. He's doing it all winter just to see what fish do in winter, you know, where they go. And he's been doing it every week. He posted a 7-day map of these little fish going around. It's just like dots on a map, and you can see these lines. And they look like there were 2 or 3 groups of fish, and they were very huddled up together, just going around in circles. But it shows you day and night as well, and they're in a different place in the day than what they're in. And then for about 2 days in the middle of it all, they all grouped up together right in the middle of the lake and were just swimming about in circles, in very tight little circles. It was really interesting. I need to find that so I can follow it and keep an eye on it all winter. I got the impression they were gonna do it all winter. What led me on to that anyway? John Mack. Lost my thread. If you see something, if you see fish showing in the middle, let's say, or you just see that one show in the middle of the night, there's a very good chance that they're grouped up and they're all together, and they possibly will be in that same area for some considerable time, which I think is why info becomes super important. I don't know if I'm not looking for that kind of hardcore fishing. I mean, I fished Yateley Carp Art Lake when there was 9 carp in there. I fished the whole winter on there and caught one of the big ones single scale in December. But I only did that because it was so busy through the summer, I couldn't get anywhere near any of the swims. When there was about 4 of us that fished right through.
I found the thing you're talking about, iFishman.
iFishman, how have you found that?
Because it's on the carp feed page. If you posted from Thursday, they shared iFishman's video.
It's on the net in association with carpfeed.com, so it's definitely true. It's
an intriguing little video plotting fish movements at this time of year. Not going to watch it now because my Wi-Fi is crap and it'll cut our signal out, but that's where it is, and I'm going to watch it as soon as we finish because I find that stuff fascinating.
Ah, yes, really interesting. I did like the page. I'm on it now. Yeah, I liked the page since I saw it, but I just couldn't remember what it was called. Yeah, really interesting. I think he's been posting it every week. From now on, an exciting look. Yeah, so iFishman, all one word. The Year of the Carp. From now on, an exciting look underwater. What carp do in nature when winter is coming? Rest, winter, energy saving. This is obviously translated because he's foreign, so it's not making much English sense. But yeah, but nothing of everything. November is coming to an end. We take a look at the carp behaviour over 7 days in a 25 hectares flat depth of 8 foot lake. Water temperature is 7 to 8 degrees. A total of 37 carp. They're small, from 50 to 75 centimetres. So what's that, like about £5 to £10, would you say?
Maybe a little bit more than that, but not too much, I think. Depends on the shape of the fish as well, obviously.
The whole recording's using high-resolution telemetry. The fish, the red fish we have caught in the summer... yeah, there's two colours. There's red and blue, and like a light blue on here. The blue fish are fish we've not caught. Ah, right, so you can see the difference between fish that have been fished for and fish that haven't been fished for, with the red and the blue. The lake as a whole is a bathtub, places mark earlier, attraction, where it is 3 feet deep, the bays above the two, and the next right are flat. Okay. Looks really interesting. They've obviously gone some detail about this. I like the post, so I can see it. I presume they're going to post these regular.
Yeah, I think that qualifies as a worth a look, don't you? Something a bit different.
Worth a look.
Very different, yeah. I mean, I've said, as far as technology goes, we are going to see at some point somebody's going to do it. A lake where fish are chipped, such as like a home fen type lake. A lake where fish are chipped, and somebody do exactly that. They post like 12 months. Would you love to see what the fish do over a 12-month period? But, I mean, would it take all the magic and mystery away?
Of course it would. I think all the magic and mystery has already gone from a lot of the fishing nowadays with the bait boats or more the drones. But it's whatever you want out of your fishing. You know, if you just want to rely on technology rather than watercraft and skill, that's there for you. And, you know, if you want to use your watercraft and skill, just find somewhere and where you can do that and go do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's whatever you want it to be.
That's a very good point. Talking of home fen, something else on the net, Mark. British record.
Yawn.
It's on the net. It must be true.
There is some news, though, isn't there?
There is, yes. Captain Jack has been turned down by the BRFC.
Yes. A couple of things here. One, it looked like that they've done it because the scales weren't accurate. So it looks like the story we reported on last week from carpfeed.com, it looks like his new... what's it called? The assessment of the scales, the new scale
calibration,
checking, the calibration from the makers of the scales, Reuben Heaton. It looks like he didn't get them to the record committee in time because one of the reasons they cite for not doing it is because one of a number of reasons is because the scales were half a pound out, which is two notches on some brand new Rubens, 8 ounce. So I presume he didn't get the new calibration details into them in time. But there's some very interesting things. It looks like the BRFC have drawn a line in the sand here, haven't they?
No. If you actually read it, they've not drawn any line in the sand and just left a lot of grey areas because they have not actually committed to any criteria. They've just given a list of things that they will look at, but have not actually drawn up rules.
Yes,
if you read it, it's very very hazy, but I think reading between the lines we can all see what they're getting at and also what's happened in history with the catfish and trout records.
So news just in, The Nigel Ludbrook's capture of Captain Jack at a claimed £68.5 will not be accepted as a record. Scales were checked by Norfolk Calibration Services, found to be weighing half a pound too heavy. The committee also discussed terms for a record carp claim given recent events, but came to no specifically conclusive terms. Therefore, every record claim will be reviewed individually on its own merits. Which is exactly what you were just saying, Mark. But
yeah.
It does go on to say, the committee concluded it'd be helpful to advise potential record claimants for any freshwater species as to some of the aspects of the capture which will come under scrutiny in the process of considering a claim. And those things are the weight of the fish when stocked into the water from which it was caught, the length of time the fish has been in the water since stocking, the origin of the fish and history prior to stocking, whether the fish reached the weight claimed, feeding on natural foods or angler's bait only, without supplementary feeding or other treatments. And also they want evidence of the growth rate of the fish. So I presume if a fish goes to 70, they want to see it, you know, pictures in that lake from, they want evidence of seeing it from a small weight to a big weight in that lake. That's fair enough. Whether the fish reached the weight claimed on natural food or angler's bait only. Well, I think they've opened a can of worms here. I would like to speak to somebody from the Record Fish Committee. Now, it's a voluntary job, this. I don't know how you become a part of the British Record Fish Committee, and I'm quite glad I'm not on here, but there's a bit of me would like an opinion on this. So I think, firstly, the things that are taken into consideration are brilliant. It shows that they're thinking about all the things us as anglers are concerned about, you know, which is instant big fish, you know, manufactured records, all that sort of stuff. It goes to show, I think the points they've addressed are all good ones. I just think they need to draw that line in the sand and say, okay, these are the rules. It needs to have grown this much of its body weight within the lake. It needs to have been in the lake this long. The one that I think is crazy is whether the fish reached the weight claimed on natural food or angler's bait only. Now, this goes back to the thing I've said all along.
If you've got that wrong, it says natural food and angler's baits only, without supplementary feeding or other treatments.
Yes, but how many lakes syndicates do you know where the owner feeds the fish throughout the year? I mean, pretty much every syndicate I've fished in the last 15 years, that happens.
The ones I've known, I mean, yeah, it's happened on Monks this year, not to, didn't really please many people. But then I think Andy fished his Woolpack fish, but I only, as far as I know, he only did that after spawning when the lake was closed, kind of replacing the angler's baits.
Lots of lakes do, you know, there's a number of them up north. Do even lakes like Deadman's, which is a club lake, you know, that they buy feed from Nash to feed the bait with, you know, these syndicates like Grenville. You said Monks were doing it. And any fishery that's run well, i.e. the owner gives a damn about his fish, he looks after the lake, he regularly stocks fish, replaces them, but they pretty much all buy fish for the future, keep them in one of the ponds on the complex, feed them, and then put them into the main lake when they reach a certain size, and then sometimes feed the main lake as well. I mean, I can't think of many that don't, to be honest.
Yeah, I can think of quite a few that, well, that do and don't. But
the point is how can you ever police that?
Well, they, as you just said, it is just telling us that it is one of the things that they will look at, and they will judge each claim on its own merits. So
the origin of the fish. So again, you know, what are they going to deem? I like the fact that they're looking at all these things, but I'd like them to actually say, okay, if it's an Israeli fish, it won't be counted. But they're never going to say that, are they? They're going to do it behind closed doors and then just make a decision.
Exactly, yeah.
If they're going to come out and state all these things, I think they should actually state, you know, stipulations. I think they should draw that line in the sand.
Yeah, I don't think they actually can, but if you also go to the BRFC's own site or an own statement I've read somewhere, they do actually say that they will make a decision on any claim and not have to provide an explanation for that decision.
Cop out. Absolute cop out.
Is it? Or do they just not want all the Facebook justice warriors on the backs?
The Carpi justice warriors.
The Carpi justice warriors, yes.
I think, like, it's an official record. And I think if you're doing something in an official capacity, you have to be accountable.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, you know, if you're going to make these rules and make things that a record doesn't particularly affect anyone other than the captor and maybe the lake, you know, the lake itself.
Yeah.
Lakes are a lot more popular when they hold a British record, I can assure you. Especially a legitimate British record. I don't know. I mean, as we said last week, I think the 82-pounder should have been claimed, and it just kind of stops all this, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't mention that if the fish... it doesn't say in the notes that you've copied and pasted here, it doesn't say that the fish... consideration of whether the fish will be able to naturally sustain its weight in the fishery concerned. So I'm guessing that one covers possibly the fact that if a fish gets dropsy or something, or it makes the weight by being ill, can't lose its spawn, whatever, if it cannot sustain its weight, i.e. it dies because it's ill, then maybe it can't be claimed.
Well, that's where a precedent has been set. You know, if you look at Roddy Porter's and Alex White's capture of the Mid-North Ants fish, which finally broke Chris Yates' record.
Yeah.
That fish was grossly bloated and ill and didn't last much longer and was accepted as a record.
But this is the problem, they're contradicting. Yeah. Chris Yates, the bishop as well, was a bloated spawn-bound fish which died.
I think that if we're going by precedents in the past, it mentions at the bottom... where they have ceased records for the Wells catfish, which was because of imports being brought in over £100, just demolishing the British record. The record was ceased. And then cultivated game fish, which is where...
trout.
Well, like it says, they were just cultivated and fed up to ridiculous sizes. I seem to remember a venue called Deva Springs, whatever it was called, doing rainbows to, like, you know, £30, which they can't grow to that in the wild.
So the good thing about this is it looks like they want to keep the carp record, which I think is sensible because carp fishing is the biggest division of fishing these days, other than maybe sea angling, and they're not too fussed about. I suppose there are sea angling records, but you know, there's not too many fish get caught twice from the sea, but especially from the shores. But other than sea angling, carp fishing is the biggest growth sport fishing's had in a long, long time. It's the most popular, seems to be the most money in it. So I'm glad that they are taking all the things that most people are concerned about and attempting to use these things to maintain some sort of integrity with the record. I really like that. And the fact that they've cited, you know, we're doing this because we don't want it to go the way of the game records or the catfish records, you know, because of imports and because of artificially fed fish. So I kind of like what they're doing. I wish they would make it a little bit clearer. Just tell us, you know, what origins won't you consider? But I don't think they're going to do that. It looks like they've protected themselves with a little shroud of...
At the bottom of the statement, it does say... the BRSE does not wish to encourage any attempts to introduce record-sized fish via imports or attempts to manipulate records by producing record-sized fish through the use of deliberate fishery management practices.
I can't help but think that's a direct attack on Rob Hales. It's almost like a personal message.
Well,
Kevin Nash, although with English born and bred fish and English heritage fish, Kevin did try and do exactly the same thing in the cops in the early days. He was attempting to grow a British record. What scuppered those plans were the fish bred really well in there for a few years, and
we made conditions a bit too good for them.
Yeah, and
they got a bit horny.
Yeah, and it was a load of commons in the lake from sort of 20 to 40 pound, lots of them, 50, 60. They took another 8 out last week when they drained the lake down, plus the 50 odd that we took out between Alan Blair, myself, Roger, and a couple of other people. Yeah, the, a smallish lake, 2 acre lake, was housing about 70 or 80 carp. So although he reckons he did grow the biggest fish to around 70 pound at the time, which would have been a record, it never got caught at that weight, and then it did die, the big one, the one Holmesy had at 60. Talking of Holmesy, Holmes is at the Northern Anglia show this year. Did you know recently, we did mention it the other week, Holmesy had had another kipper, a 60 pounder, a new 60 from Deepins, which makes him the only angler to have had 3 60s from the UK, which is crazy. 3 different 60s, just think about that.
Yeah, he cannot knock the man's fish catching ability one bit. He does. He's a bit of a kipper magnet.
He is, and he's going to be talking at the Northern Anglia Show. We've released some of the lineups. There's a couple of to be confirmed, but yeah, if you go on the Northern Anglia Show page, you'll be able to see the lineups on there for the Saturday and Sunday. Grab your ticket if you haven't already done it. There's even a Carpcast VIP bundle where you can have a Carpcast hoodie, t-shirt, and it basically means you get discounted stuff and a free ticket for the show on any day that you choose. The show's on the 24th, 25th of February this year. Mark and I will be there. We'll be on our Carpcast stand. There'll be a VIP Carp Holders stand where Gashper, the Sabinian guy, absolute all-round fantastic angler, he's going to be there on the stand as well. So if you are thinking of a trip and wondering, you know, what the guide would be like, it'll either be myself or Gasper, or both of us. Come and say hello to him. Yeah, and obviously about 150 different exhibitors, 15,000 people visiting over 2 days. It's just a great day out. So northernanglishow.co.uk. For that, yeah, that's pretty much it for the British record. You think? I think it's going to quieten down a little bit now. This, because obviously Captain Jack's been knocked, but I mean, I'd like to have seen the scales be correct for Captain Jack, because the next person to catch it at over record weight, which it surely is going to be, is probably going to try and claim it again, and that's when we'll find out if they would consider that fish. Which was, I believe, stocked at £39. Even if it reaches 70, it'd be interesting to see if it's, you know, nearly doubled its weight in that lake. Whether, although it was artificially fed, I know they had feeders in there, didn't they, in the early years before it opened? They had electronic feeders, so it'd be interesting to see if that does get counted. But I kind of like where they're going here, this BRFC. I wish they'd make it clearer, but I do like it.
Yeah, I think I've got to agree with you on that. And shall we move on?
We shall move on. Anything else, Mark, on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, shall we talk about otters? We've not we've not been depressed enough yet. Although, yes, tide may be turning.
Some interesting developments. Desmond, who is also at the Northern Anglia Show this year, he made a post yesterday, didn't he, Mark?
Yes, he did, and I've got it in front of me now, and basically says, thank you David Webb, who is chairman of the UK Wild Otter Trust, for coming out and saying organisations like his have made mistakes. He went on to say it was wrong that little or no research was made into sustainability of the rivers that hundreds of otters were released into when groups were working to re-establish the animal back in the 80s and 90s. Wow. They've actually, I think that's a first step to hopefully something actually making a change.
So where's this guy from?
He's a chairman of the UK Wild Otter Trust, so he's a proper otter nut. You know, he dreams about otters and has otter ornaments around his house and a nice otter egg cup in the morning, I'm sure.
So I wonder if you know, all these pictures. I mean, the anglers have been quite vocal with social media campaigns about posting pictures of, you know, fish with their internals ripped out, you know, quite gruesome looking pictures of, you know, freshly mulled carp. Anglers have been quite proactive in posting these on EA posts, on anything to do with otters. You know, there's been a lot of social media debate about otters, and anglers have been very strong with it. I'm wondering if he's just seen all this, if he's actually noticed it, and if it, I'm wondering how he's got to this conclusion that it's a bad thing. You know, somebody that's behind the procreation of otters.
He's got to have seen it. He cannot miss it. And I think for a long time, the otter people and the you know, Chris Packhams of the world, they've just stuck their head up the rear ends and pretend it's not happening, where their lovely little furry otters are running rampant and just totally upsetting the ecosystem. But getting back to this quote from David Webb, where he says, little or no research was made. How can you get away with that when you are releasing an apex predator into the wild? Because we've all seen these pictures from when we, don't know, well, I did A-level environmental science, and I remember these pictures of like, just like a great big pyramid of the food chain, and right at the bottom you've got all your little planktons and invertebrates, and, you know, then bigger animals, and then bigger, and right at the top you'd have one or two apex predators compared to the thousands and thousands of little invertebrates right at the bottom. You release all the otters like they have done, it makes that pyramid top heavy, and they need to eat, and they just eat everything below them.
Yeah. It seems bold that somebody's come out and actually admitted to not doing any research, which...
I think it's the first step. I mean, the first step of an addict on the way to recovery is admitting that they've got a problem. I think this is that's the same.
Well, I think if you make if you're going to make a statement like that, surely the next thing to follow on from that is some sort of powers laws changing for us to be able to protect the fish against them. If they're admitting they made a problem and or made a mistake doing it, then surely they're going to address that problem now.
Well, hopefully what I'd like to see is, you know, the likes of the Wild Otter Trust and other otter organisations actually coming together with the PAG and working together to, you know, reach some sort of compromise and solution. You can see, sure, that'd be in an ideal world. Whether it'll happen, I don't know, but I have faith in the PAG. They've got some great people behind them, and let's just see what happens. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's definitely a very good... I'm just on the UK Wild Otter Trust page now, see if I can find anything there. I actually saw a magazine, a screenshot of a magazine article this morning that I now cannot find.
I think it was in the latest Angling Times, that screenshot. I've seen it myself.
Yeah. It's a
bit fuzzy to read, but Angling Times has the feature.
Yes, which means our man Tom will have it. So by the next time we record, I'm pretty sure Tom will have spoken to the people. Obviously, Carp Feed is part of Angling Times, so I'm guessing he will have all the info next time we speak to him. But yeah, it's a cracking step. Obviously, as you know, Des Taylor has been very vocal about the rivers, you know, the stocks that have been vanishing in the rivers this over the last couple of years. He's, you know, coming at it from a non-carp fishing perspective, but from the rivers, which have been decimated, I believe. So
yes, you can't fence a river.
No, so yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting how this develops. I think what's going to end up happening is that we get more powers to be able to protect lakes. I mean, anybody who's spending a significant amount of money on fish now are fencing their lakes. Otherwise, there's just no point spending any money on stocks these days.
Yeah.
Otters have been seen pretty much everywhere now. I don't know of any area of the country that hasn't got otters. sure in that article I read that a load of young have been released this year, 100 young that have been taken up in captivity.
Yeah, I saw that link. I've not actually read it, but I think it was to in Scotland somewhere, in a lock.
Yeah.
It was a radio article. Again, I'd have to search around the link and whoever posted it and investigate more. We're such great journalists. We know where to get the information. We're just not bothered to look at it yet.
Yeah, well, this stuff has literally all happened in the last 24 hours. So, as I said, I'm just waiting for the car feed stuff to go up. But, yeah, it's very interesting, but definitely a step in the right direction. So it's a positive one, isn't it? Not a moan.
It's definitely positive. Although, Des says at the bottom of his post, he says, "But I bet there'll be lots of research done before we can do anything about it."
Good old Des.
Yes.
Yes, cynical. Anyway. I had a lovely chat with one of our Carpcast regular guests in the early days, a man known affectionately as Ting Tong in the trade. Let's have a chat with Mr. Ian McMillan. Feels like I'm in love. Just the first time I met you. So I'd like to welcome somebody that was on the Carpcast quite a bit in the early days. We've not spoke for some time. Have we, Mr. McMillan? How are we doing, Mr. Ting Tong?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all.
Now you're global. You know, you don't want me now. You know, I helped you in the early days, and now you're gangster tripping. You don't want me now.
Not at all, my friend. Not at all. I miss your face. It's been a while, isn't it? It's show season coming up. I'm guessing we'll bump into each other soon.
Yes, I hope so, mate. Yeah, well, certainly at the Northern Show. I think it's firmly placed itself as probably the premier show, hasn't it?
I hope so. I wish everybody felt like that, but
I'm not paid to say that, by the way, for anybody that's listening. But no, last year's was just immense. I went in, and you can't help but be wowed by the organisation and the sheer size of it. It was amazing, and everybody was saying the same. It's not just me. Every stand all you said to, they were like, "Jesus Christ, this is impressive." You know, very well run. Everybody liked the space that you could move around and you weren't rammed into the aisles. It was good, mate. Fair play to you and Roger. You've done a sterling job.
Yes.
Building that to what it is now.
I better give Reedy a big shout as well, because to be fair.
Oh, I'm Reedy, yeah. Because he'll be texting me. If I don't give props to him, he'll be on me.
Yeah, he does most of that organisation, to be fair. So he's the one to be thanking. We set it up. He's the one that does the graph. So, Northern Anglia Show, 24th, 25th of February this year it is. It's we alternate with because of the Mont-Luçon show in France, which is every other year. But yeah, so tell us about you. You still with all the same companies? What about your fishing? What have you been up to?
Yeah, everything's. I've fished in the UK twice this year.
Wow.
Just because I guess it's something we could talk about. You know, my role with Shimano is just so busy now. And you basically, I'm at their beck and call. You know, they say jump and I say how high, you know. So we've got, I went to Austria earlier in the year. I really do love my European fishing. And obviously, I know we're going to have a chat about the Balkans afterwards. But I love my European fishing. It's not because I'm getting old. Well, I am getting old and miserable. But we hire a lake. And we have the lake to ourselves. So we normally take less people than the lake will hold. So there's loads of water. Nobody's going to boat over and you'll swim. I even sort of pick the fish that I want to catch now from Europe.
Yeah.
Specifically in France. You know, I've been going to France for 15 years and, you know, there's lots of big fish, but they're kind of pale pigs and, you know, they might be massive, but they're not that attractive anymore. And so I sort of specifically target lakes that have got really nice fish, very weedy. You can use a boat, and it's great. It's I love that style of fishing now, and I just love the adventure side of it. I really do. And the Austria trip that me and a good mate Ian Smith went on, it was a chance sort of conversation, and it was all down to Briggsy. Because I think we all saw those amazing fish that Briggsy caught from a lake in Austria about this time last year. And within an hour of him putting his blog up, me and Smithy watched it, and we were like, Jesus Christ, we've got to catch them fish.
Mm-hmm.
They were just off the Richter scale. And so I spoke to Steve, and he gave me the guy's email address. He's run as a syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who owns the lake has his own two swims. Cut a long story short, I got an email back, and it was on. So we went in, and you know, bear in mind, it's a tough lake. It's a long, long way to go, and we didn't care. We didn't want to catch a 70-pounder. We wanted to just catch one fish because Briggsy was the only ever English angler to ever fish there.
Yeah.
So we thought if we can get one bite, it would be a massive buzz, and it was. It was amazing. The lake itself isn't that attractive, but the fish are just amazing. They really are. And we had a good week. I think we had six or seven each. But surprisingly, it was other anglers that ended up ruining it for us because we got boxed in and they all use underwater cameras.
Yeah.
And it's just their way of fishing, you know. And we knew as soon as the anglers turned up on the weekend that we weren't going to catch any more fish, and we didn't. So it ended sourly, but we did catch some really nice fish, and it was a good adventure, you know, and I think that's what I love from my fishing, you know, and then obviously the Shimano, we've got two shoots for the Shimano DVD that's coming out very shortly, one in Bluebell and one in France, and then I had to film Cart Wars, which is also coming out very soon, and then obviously I've had a couple of France trips of my own fishing in the autumn. And we're up to date now, you know. It's not all airs and graces and rock star lifestyle being a consultant, as people think, you know. But I love it, you know. You know this very well. I mean, it's just I am becoming a bitter and twisted old bastard. I think at times because I'm the sort of angler that wants 50 acres to himself, that doesn't want anybody else coming anywhere near me and casting all over me. And you know, I can ruin my own fishing without somebody else helping me do that.
I think it's just part of getting older, isn't it? Because, like, you know, seemingly you're more financially stable when you get older, and you know more about what you want and what you don't want, more importantly. And I think you get to a stage in life where you can afford to, not afford financially, but you would rather fish less but fish the type of fishing that you want rather than get in with the rat race. And I remember a few things you've just said. I remember being, you know, fishing the circuit waters when I was in that keen stage through sort of late 20s and 30s, and I put everything else aside. I'd have no money in the bank. I'd use my last penny for fuel to drive down south, knowing that the mortgage was going to get bounced on Tuesday, you know. And did it anyway. The hunger was that bad. The drive to go and catch some fish.
You're right there. I think as you get older, you almost want everything on your terms. And I think, you know, I know you've done the circuit water for the last 15 years, and I've chased a different sort of circuit with probably more fish than the waters you've fished in. You know, your Wellies, your Essex Manors, all the famous circuit waters I've fished in. And I haven't got that hunger anymore to drive 4 hours to target these waters. And then whether that's because work has to come first, as in Shimano, you know, there's no point in me spending, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a year on tickets anymore, because if Shimano say, well, we want you to come and do this filming for a new product, or we need you to do this in the office, I have to go and do it.
Yeah.
You can't. And then you're always feeling, well, I've spent $2,000 on a Welly ticket. I've got to be on there, you know. And then that, it kind of gets you like that. It's a double-edged sword that grabs you, and you think, right, well, I've got to get my money's worth out of the ticket because I've paid for it. And it's hard. It's hard to get the balance. And like you say, I used to be relentless 15 years ago, and even up to probably 5 years ago. And then you realise that there's more important things in life than sitting on a motorway in a traffic jam to chase a 40 or a 50 pounder. Now,
I think
I'd go on.
I think your priorities change, that's all. It's not that it's more important, it's more important now, like, because your life's moved forward, as I said, you're a bit older, your priorities have shifted, your work now comes before, you know, my mortgage did not come before fishing, like, years ago. Now it does. It's things move, and I think what you did a lot more foreign fishing than me. I always wanted to live abroad, but I remember saying to a few people that I could not leave the British fishing. There was too many fish I wanted to catch, you know, and too many little achievements that I wanted to do. I always used to pick the hard waters, as well, as you know, but now nothing could be further from my mind. I mean, there are no low stock lakes and or low stock syndicates anymore. They're all, you know, fishing's so big in the UK, they're all full of fish now, your Raisbury's and, you know, even Yateley and all the low Elstow 2's now full of fish, like all the places that had under 20 carp in. St Ives Lagoon's another one, you know, that got a stock in. Fishing's worth so much money now, you'd be stupid to own a bit of water like that and leave 10 fish in it, you know, financially. So, but I found, I started going abroad, I started seeing the things that you probably saw 10, 15 years ago when you started going abroad, and I'm just like, wow, it puts British fishing
in. It's amazing, isn't it?
It puts British fishing, like, right at the back of my priority list. I mean, I've loved the UK fishing for years, but the lakes are so busy the way it is now. Like, there's a lot better, more enjoyable, relaxing, new challenges. It's got everything. Yeah. And I've now found the place that's literally ticks all my boxes, you know, and it's, which is Slovenia and Croatia. We've got the perfect lake in Slovenia for you, by the way, after what you've just said. There's a lake we're offering trips on called the Wild Lake, which is boats, and you're going to catch less, but they're worth a lot more.
I've already been looking at that on VIP Carp Holidays. I've already been I've been trawling through there thinking, right, which one shall I pick? Because it does look amazing. I mean, the thing that appeals to me about what you've set up is that whilst I don't particularly want to use somebody else's gear or gear that someone else has used, I'll compensate that for the fact that I can fly, because it's a 2-day drive, and I've done it twice to Euro Aquern, and I've done it to Austria, and it is an absolute ball breaker. And even to the point, I've been offered to go to Sumba, which is a lake you know.
Yeah.
But the trip I've been offered, they're taking 20 anglers. There's too many people for me for that lake.
Yeah.
And I want to fly because I can afford to fly. But then you've got to get you can't expect somebody else to take your mountain of gear and your mountain of bait and do 2 days worth of driving while you sit on a plane for 2.5 hours. It's not right, you know. So it's, even to me, European thing now, I want everything on my
team. Well, what you've got to remember is I'm the same as you. Like, I've been that guy. I would have never flown. Now, I have flown a couple of times recently to Cavaignac and stuff fishing, and I know what people want, because I'm as miserable as you when it comes to stuff like that. So the gear that we've got sent over there, there's no compromising, you know. We've gone for grey air curve rods, you know, decent sized bivvies, loads of Nash stuff. Like, it's all quality gear, and I've got stuff that I would be happy using myself. There's no compensation there. I'll even get you your own mop and bucket to clean your bivvy out with every day.
Well, no, I don't use a ground sheet. I haven't done for years, and then I don't have to take my shoes off when I go into the bivvy. I think what it is, Jay, I think people are now searching further and further afield to get that bit of not just sense of adventure. You know, I'll quite happily sit on a big lake in Europe, wherever it may be, with the chance of catching one special fish. You know, I get that other people go to Europe and would rather go to France and catch 10 a day. Well, you know, that's not for me. I'd rather just sit there and relax and chance it almost, but I'm going to catch a really nice special fish from a nice special lake rather than catching 10 a day, because, you know, it's just too, I've done that for years. I have caught lots of fish in France, and I've caught them from harder lakes and easier lakes, and again, it's about choices, isn't it? You know, you've all got the option to choose where you want to go.
Yeah, It's and that's the thing about the Balkans, that it's got everything over there. The Croatia lakes are fairly, they're all man-made gravel pits, and they're not that mature. They haven't been there that long. Most of them were dug less than 20 years ago, some of them 15, and they're not at the peak yet, those Croatia lakes. Shumba got the fish a year or two before the others in the same area. There's 12 of them around Shumba in the same region of Zagreb. And that one, the only reason the fish are so big in Shumba is because they were stocked a year or two before the others. That's why that one's a little bit more mature. I think it was the first one to be dug, but the others are right behind it. I mean, one of the ones, Rob Hughes went to it this autumn, but I was the first English guy to fish there this summer ever. It's had the fish just over 10 years. 3 years ago, there was 3 20-kilo fish. There's now 120. 20-kilo fish, with most of them being 25-kilo plus, and there's 4 mid-70s. And this is in the
space. And is that growing off bait, or is that growing off the natural stuff that's in the lake?
I'll tell you what it is. It's both, because they have a lot of matches, as you know, over there. They're very big on their carp matches at weekends. You know, that's why the Croatian team is so good. A lot of these lakes, they're very big, you see. They're all sort of 100 acres plus, apart from Shumba, it's one of the smaller ones, like 55 acres, is it, or something? But what it is you've got the River Sava, which, again, is a fantastic river with huge everything in there. It's a big wide river, and their gravel is very porous, so whereas ours is quite small and it actually seals the water in the lakes, theirs is almost like a sieve. Like the rocks are when you see it dug and all the machinery, the rocks are like the size of your fist or bigger. So they're quite porous, so the water levels in all those, they go up and down with the river, like almost daily, definitely weekly. So the water's getting filtered every day. It's getting all the goodness brought in from down the mountains, because they're you know, obviously you've got, it's just mountains everywhere, as you know. So you've got all this good stuff coming down the mountains, and it's basically filtering the lakes and changing the water daily. Now add that to 30-35 degrees average temperature for 8 months of the year, the carp are feeding heavy. And I think the other thing is when it goes cold around now, it goes really cold. So it goes from perfect feeding conditions to hibernation in literally a week. It then stays really cold for 3 months. So they get complete rest. And then at the flick of a switch in March, April, somebody flicks a switch, it's 30 degrees again, they're back. There's none of that slow waking up, because it goes from cold to really hot again. And it's just, I think it's the most perfect environment for a carp. Like they get that rest in the winter, and they feed for 8-9 months of the year in the most perfect water. So I think that's what it is. They're nowhere near their peak. Yeah, I think Shumba's probably, because what I've been told over there is they don't live that long. Like 20 years is good, and I think Shumba's, it won't be far off its peak, I think. Whereas the other lakes are a couple of years behind, so they're going to hit the peak over the next year or two.
I think with Shumba, it's a bit like your Alacrinth. Nobody had heard of it, and then burst onto the scene, and everybody had to go, you know, myself included. And now, you know, yet again, I'm hearing horror stories about Euroaqua, where he's just messing people about with swims, and they're not in swims that he's promised them. And I think people have just had enough. I think he charges a fortune. And I think Shumba will end up the same. I know it's a club water, so you can only get on at certain times for a lake exclusive for a booking agent.
Yeah, and it's already very expensive compared to the other lakes. I mean, for what you'll pay the booking agent for a week on Shumba, you can do our entire holiday with bait trip, you know, to lakes that have got fish almost as big. You can do the entire trip for the same price as what they want just for the fishing.
It was only even earlier this year, I was looking into Shumba, and you could actually get quite a lot of information about it on the internet.
Yeah.
And you could actually see the prices. It was dirt cheap, absolutely, because he's some sort of club water run as a club.
They all are.
Still book.
They're all public waters.
I'm not going to name him, because he's got a reputation of being a bit of a shark anyway, this booking agent that's got all of these lake exclusives on Shumba.
Yeah.
But it was when some of my mates were out there, when the Ridge Monkey Boys were out there, they were filming a couple of months ago and Dave Levy had a big fish, I think it was an upper 80.
Yeah.
The price went up €100 overnight. Now that's just blatantly taking the piss out of people, because he knows that people want to go, and he knows people will pay. But I'm of the opinion now that I would rather search other avenues and have a bit more of a venture than line somebody's pockets that's blatantly just ripping people off. You know, yeah, he's got access on a lake that's got some great fish in, but it costs an absolute minute figure for what he's charging.
Yeah, you can turn up and it's €50 a day, Sean, yeah, but yeah. But you can't get a swim anymore. That's the problem. There's something what they're doing. You're not actually allowed to do over there. So I'm still not sure how they've got round it, because all the lakes are public. Each lake's owned by a club in like the local district, and they're all open access public waters, apart from when there's a match on at weekends. Like anyone, anyone can turn up and fish. It's the same with, you know, my one's like 4 kilometres away that we've been fishing on. It's a public lake. It's €20 a day, like Shumba was 2-3 years ago. Mm. That was €20 a day. For some reason, their club has realised the worth. I mean, the lakes do get busy over there. The ones with the really big fishing. I mean, the one that we've been fishing, Rob Hughes went to it a few weeks back, actually. Yeah, pretty grim conditions, but he did catch a few. But there are a couple of others that I would like to fish. But again, the clubs, they have funny rules, some of them. Some of them, you've got to be a member. And if you're not a member, there's 2 people a week allowed, like non-members, if you know what I mean. But they all still have to have a degree of non-members fishing, like some sort of open access. But most of them are just day ticket. Like if you've got somebody who speaks the language and you can just turn up, and it's quite easy, you know. But Shumba's just got really commercial, I think. Like my contact over there, he's like, forget that lake. That one's gone. Like done, finished.
Yeah, it would seem. I was only speaking to Bullet last night about it, because and I said the guy that's offered me a place for a trip. He's taking 20 anglers. Well, I've already spoke to some of the guys at Bin. They said, mate, that's far too many anglers. They only had 16, and they said that was a few too many.
Right.
So you're like, well, I ain't going to go all that way to risk getting a duff draw to be hemmed in a corner or not on the fish. Again, you would just look at something else like your portfolio, where you've got lakes from 50 acres to 250 acres. You think, well, I'd rather go there and fly and not catch as many fish potentially as going to Sumba and have a good time, you know, fish on my own terms for myself, you know. And it goes back to the adage of Euro Aqua, doesn't it, where people, it was a money lake. It was almost, if you've got the money to go, you're buying yourself a big fish. Well, that wasn't the case at all, and it still isn't the case, you know. And I think that's the same with Sumba. People go and they're thinking, well, God, how many 60s and 70s are we going to catch? And as much as there's good success stories from time to time, there's still not a lot of people's dreams get fulfilled when they go and they get in the swim. They, you know, they're pressure fish. They're not easy. It's just literally like you're going 1,200 miles one way to fish somewhere like Brasenose One that's rammed.
Yeah, that pretty much is it. Just that the average size is big. Yeah, but I'm very fortunate with Gasper, who's a good friend now, and he's extremely connected in Europe. He knows the best lakes: Slovenia, Croatia, Austria, Hungary. He's got contacts all over, and we've selected those lakes together. You know, based on what I know, English people will like. Through my experience in the game,
I think you're onto a winner. I think once people can get over, even like me, who can get over a phobia of not using substandard gear, because I know you wouldn't set people up like that, because I know you as a person, and again, I know what you want to use.
Yeah.
But once people get over that fear of, well, I'm not using my own bed chair, I'm not using my own stove, and I think it will absolutely fly, because you're taking all the hassle of the tolls and the permits to go through countries like Austria, you're taking all that hassle away. You book your flight, you jump on, and you land a few hours later. You know, it's convenience, isn't it? And people want that nowadays. So if they're going to push the boundaries and don't want to do it as an adventure on their own and drive, you're taking all the hassle away from that. And even someone like me that's been around a bit, that appeals to me.
Yeah, well, if somebody does want to drive, we'll still cater for them. You know, they won't need the tackle hire and stuff, so we'll do our trip sort of a bit cheaper and still do the guiding for them. But I would rather drive. I've done that drive this year 3 times, twice last year, and I would rather do that. It's 12 hours from Calais, just over. into Lake Bled into Slovenia. I'd rather do that than going 3.5 hours to Oxford and fishing the lake there, you know, I'd rather. But
it's just strange, isn't it? It's not being victimized or miserable, but like you say, we earn our living from the fishing industry. It's not that I'm moaning, but I just want to surround myself and do my own thing on my own terms with my friends. I don't want to get involved in the whole rat race thing again, because the industry has changed. It's become so popular. It's almost like the monster has created itself.
Yeah.
That's the problem, isn't it? You know, but there is still plenty of quiet adventure fishing to have, even on syndicates. I have got a couple of syndicates lined up for next year. Not big money tickets, but the biggest fish is £35, but there's 10 members in each syndicate. So you know that them lakes are not going to be busy. So again, I will even compensate the size of the fish I catch in the UK so it's me against the fish, not me against the other anglers.
Yeah.
And I think that's an age thing, definitely is an age thing. And like, you've got nothing to prove to people about what you've caught in the past. On different lakes, haven't. So I think your desire to chase those big, sort of big, weighty, you become less weight dominated, I think, as you get older. Well, I certainly have. I know that much.
Yeah, the experience is the important thing. I mean, it was the experience when you were young. Then you get into like wanting to chase the big ones or the significant ones, and then you get over that again, and you're back to wanting the whole thing. You know what you like, what you don't like, and like you say, your priorities change completely. More about enjoying the back to how it probably was when you first got into it. Back to enjoying the ambience, the serenity, the environment.
Well, everything. You do see all this constant stuff on social media, and you do question why some people do it. You know, is it attention seeking? Are you a Facebook angler? Is it for that? And we all put pictures on Facebook because we all have to promote different companies, whether it's you with Nash and your business or me with Shimano. So I get what people are doing, but then it becomes overindulgent where people do it, I think, just for attention. And not for the sake that, well, I really don't care if I blanked. I really don't care where I am. I'm enjoying it. I think there's lots of shining lights, though, in the hysteria of Facebook. Sean Harrison being one, I think.
Yeah.
He comes across as such. Because, again, he's been in it a lot longer than even you or I.
Yeah, very much so.
And just him as a person, you can tell. And, again, it would be like the late Jan Porter. If they do it for the right reasons, because they just love what they do. They don't care how big the fish is, they don't care where they are, as long as they're in good company and they're enjoying their fishing. And I really sort of appreciate that now more than ever. As your priorities change, and you know, my mum's not been too well at all, and I'm so focused on that I almost don't want to do a night in the winter away from home too far. I think, God, if something, you know, it's weird, isn't it, how your priorities change and other things mean more than catching a fish.
Old age. It's
crazy. But no, it is old age. It's maturity, and it's getting a balance where I have fishing is such a massive part of my life, and it's what pays my mortgage. But there's so many other things in my life that I like doing. Normally sitting on my own in a dark room, sort of beating myself up because I'm a miserable old bastard, but I just enjoy my life in lots of different ways. I really do, and fishing is just a good percentage of that as well.
Yeah, it's I'm really glad I have fishing, but like I say, I enjoy different fishing now, and it's, you know, over there in the Balkans, it's the first place that kind of ticks all the boxes for me. It's got that peacefulness, but it's got the good fish, and they're all pretty well stocked. Even like that wild lake, you know, it's you're still going to catch 5 or 6 fish in a week, which, you know, if you said we're going to go off the beaten track over here, you know, you'd be looking at one fish in a week. Whereas, you know, all the other lakes over there, they're all 5 to 10 fish a day, most of them. You get in the right areas, which obviously we're going to put you in. On each lane, their average stock is a lot different to our average stock, if you know what I mean. These clubs are putting thousands of carp in there.
You know, I mean, I've been listening to every carp cast, and since you've been talking about this, you can tell that your voice expression, you know, I'm a big advocate of the Jamie Classic voice, always have been since episode one, but your voice changes, your whole excitement levels, your whole excitement levels go up, and that's a sign that you found something that you really want to do, and again, I can tell that in your voice as soon as you start talking about it. And that's refreshing to see, because I think a lot of people are they go to France or they go to wherever they might go in Europe, and they're almost picturing themselves, like I did that first time when I went to EuroAqua, where you're thinking, right, well, how many am I going to catch? Not a case of if I catch.
Yeah.
You're almost convincing yourself. And I think that people go, and a lot of people go all the time. You know, there's a lot of anglers that go to Europe. And I love it. But they think they're going to go over. These fish are just going to be jumping in the net. They haven't even got to cast a rig out. But they're not. You analyse it really. And any commercial water in France is a day ticket water, isn't it? Like, to be honest, as 20 blokes go, another 20 arrive. So why would you not go and give these fish the ultimate respect? And I see people on Facebook that they almost slag other people's, you have to go to Europe to catch them, because you can't catch him in the UK. Well, really? You know, you look at Steve Briggs. You know, that guy has caught, was it now 50 from 12 different countries? Nobody else has done that. And like Briggs, Briggs has done it at home and abroad. He's just chosen to pioneer that European side for most of his fishing days, hasn't he? And now I look at that. I even remember Max Cottis. When Max was involved at Ace, when Shimano were involved at Ace, It was only probably about 6-7 years ago, and Max said to me, you know, Max doesn't fish in the UK anymore, and he hasn't for some years, because he realised what he wanted from his fishing some years before I had. I was still chasing fish around the circuit waters, and Max said, I can't be arsed with it anymore. I think he was fishing Grenville at the time, and that was starting to get busy, and there was a few sort of issues on there he had with politics, and he just drew a line under it. You know, he's been going to France. He's got the advantage that he lives in Essex, so he's like an hour away from the Eurotunnel. For us, well, for you, it's even further than me. But for me, it's four hours to get to the port.
Yeah, a good lake in the Champagne region, like, is sort of 5 hours from Calais. Well, I've got to do more than that before I even get to Calais.
I mean, we just come back from Pascal's. We did a 10-day on Pascal's. Which is again, the lake isn't that exciting. It's very weedy. The fish are really nice. It's hard fishing. It's all from boats, so you know everything's bang on. But you shut the gate. The facilities are fantastic, and you're left alone. Phil and Pascal come and see you, and it's just a very, very good vibe, if you like. But I'm off to Gran Canaria. The missus on Sunday for a bit of sun, and I've even said to Beachy, who always comes to France with me, you know, we might just nip over if the weather's holding in December. We might just nip over for 3 or 4 nights into one of Pascal's other lakes. And that's in the Champagne region.
Are you going to do a day's fishing in Gran Canaria?
No, I'm not. It's all sunbathing and eating and drinking lots of crap, I think, really. That's what. If I took a fishing rod, you know, I don't think that would go down well at all, to be honest.
It's all up there, isn't it? Alison and Dave run Gran Canaria and Carpet. I don't know if you know them, but I can certainly introduce you if you don't. They're good.
I've been told, though. I mean, the fish are fantastic in there, aren't they? They're really
all
nice
scaly ones, yeah. They're all big scaly.
I spoke to Mozza, and he said the drive up there, he said he was absolutely shitting himself. It's supposed to be a real hairy drive as you go up
is,
to the mountain, apparently.
It's even more hairy with the fact that all the Tour de France bikers, they all train up it because of the altitude, and it's like 45 degrees all the way up and quite narrow roads. And you want to see the speeds they're coming down at. I mean, there's a few of them die every year.
That's comforting to know.
The roads have got a lot better. I first went there about 15 years ago, and the roads are better. They are widening them and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a mountain. But I'll tell you what, it's one of the best views. When you get up there at night, there's no light pollution, and you would not believe the sky. I mean, they actually do like star watching trips up there and stuff, just because there's no light pollution. But it's a nice experience. Can't do 24 hours. All the gear's there. You just got to go up. But
I'll see. He doesn't really flick the switch at the minute, because she would go apeshit. She expects a bit of time.
They've got little villas up there and stuff. It's quite nice. Still do your sunbathing. It's warm up there. It's high.
But it would still involve carp. And she, can you imagine how many times my poor missus hears that word? I used to joke to her and like, you know, you listen to your missus on the phone and they're all talking about hair and how beautiful their nails are and all that sort of stuff. And she'll come off the phone and I said, you don't half talk some crap. And then obviously she says to me, you want to hear the shit that you talk about when you're on the, you know, she said,
it's the same to them, isn't it?
Of course it is, yeah. And again, I think you accept each other's little things that you don't like about each other. Again, it's an age thing, it's maturity.
Yeah, if I could take the missus on holiday and she didn't talk about getting her eyebrows done or had to go and get the nails done or, you know, I need to dye my roots or whatever it is, then...
Did your missus enjoy... Because I know you went to the Balkans, you had a mammoth trip this year, didn't you? And obviously I listened to everything. And was that okay? Was she okay?
She loves it.
Was she not bored? And right, so she's quite happy just chilling in the storm while you're fishing and...
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
long as you throw a festival in every now and again, she's happy.
Yeah, I think what it is, she's more than happy to move over there. She's looking forward to it as much as I am for different reasons. You know, having to make sure that we rent a property big enough for... people to stay. She's got a lot of friends and family that want to come over. There's loads of festivals and stuff in Croatia. It's only like an hour away. Such a good location where we're going to live. You've got Italy an hour. I haven't looked where Parco del Brenta is actually, but I'm sure that's in the north of Italy, which won't be far from us. You've got Austria an hour away. You've got Hungary an hour away. Croatia an hour away. It's such a good central location.
It sounds amazing, mate. Yeah, I think eyes off me. I'm quite a homely sort of person. I am. I like the cocoon of my house, and I don't mind the UK. So I don't know if I would ever do anything as adventurous as you're doing. But I do doff my cap. I think it sounds amazing. It really does.
The advantage is we've got the Northern Angling Show, which is obviously in the winter. So and it gets very cold over there in the winter. It's a ski resort. You know, through the colder months, I mean, it does hit sort of minus 18s, 20s through the winter, which I think we will do Christmas there one year, just so we're somewhere that's white at Christmas. But generally, we're going to be coming back in November when it's getting cold and staying in England, working on the show through the winter till like April time. And then, so it's basically be like a 6-month holiday every year.
Although it probably won't be a holiday because you're going to be making sure that everyone else's holiday is running tip top, I guess.
Yeah, but they're on the changeover days. A lot of people want to be left alone fishing, so we'll make sure they're in the right swims. You know, we'll stay with them the first day while they get set up. And, you know, if there's a group of 3 or 4 lads, they're going to want to stay on their own. You know, they're not going to want me hanging about. So I'll go back home and come and pick. Well, I'll do a supermarket run halfway through the week. And then pick them up on the day they fly home. So I'll go and fish around the other side of the lake if I fancy fishing that week or whatever.
So how did you come up with this formula? Was it just by meeting Jasper,
Pretty much, yeah. I wanted to do it anyway, and I spoke to him, and he really wanted to do it. He's a bit of a fixer in Europe anyway. He has people weekly coming over, and they ring him up. He's got good contacts across Europe, and he was kind of already doing it without doing it for money. You know, when I spoke to him, I said, look, I can get between us, we've got everything, you know, from the knowledge to the being able to get all the tackle at trade prices, and you know, I'll have the money after the angling show to be able to fund it. And we worked it out between us. I went back over there last year and thrashed it out. We went to look at a load of different lakes. I said, yeah, this one will work. The English will like this one. They might not like this one. They'll like this one. We picked the right waters based on what I think suits English anglers. We've put the variety in there. So, you know, there's a couple of people that want the wild lake. They don't want to know that they're going to catch 5-10 a day. They want to work for it and catch some scaly ones and whatever, linears and stuff. So I said, right, you know, we need that lake in there. We need a couple that we know they're going to catch 5-10 a day. You know,
yeah, because you know the English market, don't you? You know what English anglers want. And I guess that's probably going to be the bones of the business, I would imagine.
Exactly. And you know, all the lakes are public as well, so it's it's not like what we're saying to people is don't pick, unless you specifically want the wild lake, but don't pick a lake, don't get a preconceived idea in your head, because we'll choose the lake the day before you come based on what's happening that week. This lake's fishing well, but there's no swims, it's really busy. This one over here, you can get the best swim on the lake tomorrow. We've got some of the wardens and bailiffs from the clubs. Again, Gasper knows everybody, so he's got all the wardens from each club on the phone. The standard of living's not fantastic over there. The average wage is very low, so bunging €30 into someone's pocket to reserve an area to lake for us is, it's win-win for everybody. Yeah, it is. I think the average wage is like €800 a month. But the cost of living's low because of that. It's one of the reasons why we can afford to do it, because €400 a month gets you a decent house.
Right.
So it's although the cost of living is low because the average wage is low.
It sounds amazing. I think you've got a really good formula there. Like the sounds of it, I'll definitely be coming 100%. And I like even what you've just said, where because I've looked at the at your website, and you're like, which one do I want? Which one would I like to go? But I like the fact that, well, you just jump on a plane and then let you decide. At the end of the day, I trust your judgment and your opinion. You trust Gasper's.
Yeah.
So you just think, well, we're just going, we're going to go fishing in Croatia. We'll decide when we get there.
That's
it. Sounds very random, doesn't it? But you're trusting you and you're trusting your business partner. So I think it'll work.
Yeah, like I say, I've already had people saying, oh, they look like they're a bit bigger in that lake. And it's like, they're all very similar. Like, the lake record might be slightly different, but there's 1,000 fish in each lake. So the chance of you actually catching the lake record while you're there anyway is, is slim. But they literally differ. The biggest fish in each lake differs by a couple of pounds, maybe a kilo and a half or something. So don't get hung up. We all look at it. I was the same. I was like, if you go into the Oxford Syndicate, oh, well, that one's got a 45 in it and the other's the biggest fish of 38. Well, in reality, you're probably not going to catch a fish bigger than 38 in any of the lakes. just fish. But I was used to feel happier sitting there knowing there was a slightly bigger fish, just having the chance catching it.
Having the chance of it, yeah.
They're all so similar anyway, these lakes.
I think it's so reassuring to talk to someone about, like, because I think a lot of people listening will have all these questions that obviously we're talking about.
Definitely, yeah.
Let's be right, we haven't recorded this to talk about your business, just as we've ended up talking about it because I'm interested in it. But this guy that's got all these lakes at Sumber, I think he's got quite a few lakes on his portfolio.
Yeah.
There's very limited information. I think he's just got a lake in Austria. I'm not sure if it's those lakes where you might have gone, or Nashi. Did they film the social too?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah.
And I think that's on his portfolio now. But there's so little information. It's basically just pay me a load of money, off you go, and fend for yourselves. That's how it seems to me. But and English anglers won't want that. They want the reassurance that, okay, there's a toilet, there's a shower, that we'll feed you, we'll do. People want that reassurance before they drive a long, long way. That's why I think the commercials are so popular in France, because people like that reassurance.
It's definitely a market there for him. And I'm trying to give the best of both worlds. So, we'll do a food package. My missus is, she's done like meal plans with a dozen meals, and she'll come down and cook every day if you want that, or we'll do sort of two supermarket runs during the week. Being public lakes, they've not got lodges and the sort of facilities you might get on a commercial, but they all have toilets all around them. But their facilities are better.
They're for campsites. They're for tourists, aren't they, I guess?
Yeah, although a lot of our lakes are up in the mountains and stuff. They're slightly out of the way of the towns, but apart from Lake Bled, obviously. But every lake over there, because the culture's a bit more outdoors than, say, England, like, every lake has got port-a-loos around it, all the public lakes, like, every single lake. And they all have, like, a visitor centre on them, so they have, like, a coffee shop. Some of them have a restaurant as well, which obviously has got proper toilets in them other than port-a-loos. And you buy your ticket, because they're all public-owned. They're like public parks, almost. So if you imagine, like, a park, and there's a reception-type lodge on it, that you know, even the locals visit every day. They go in there for the coffee or tea, and there's quite a big coffee culture over there for some reason. Just randomly on the side of the roads when you're driving along, there'll be, you know, like a nice coffee shop with a load of tables and look a bit like our pubs, but they're just sort of coffee shops.
Butch our coffee instead of beer.
Yeah, and there's just a load of tables outside. Obviously, the weather's a lot nicer in it, so people are outside a lot more. But they seem to be everywhere. But on every lake, there's one of those. And some of them have got a restaurant in it as well.
And are the lakes all, I wouldn't say similar depths and stuff, are they angler-friendly? Are they weedy? Are they snaggy? Are they, because, again, I hear Sumba's very snaggy. But, you know, guys are losing a lot of tackle. And, you know, it's one of them. And do people really need that?
There's no weed on any of the lakes, really. It's the odd one, but generally there's not really any weed because they're quite deep. All the Slovenia ones, they're all natural lakes, so they're all sort of glacial meres from the Ice Age. So a lot of them are 30 foot deep plus, which means there's no weed, which means they're great for fishing.
You
can literally cast anywhere. Obviously, there's gravel and features and stuff. The only snags tend to be rocks and maybe the odd sort of tree underneath there. But again, Gasper knows the areas. He knows the swims. If there is snags in the swims, he's going to tell you. But yeah, it's not. I don't think it's as bad as what you're saying on Shumba. What happens with the lake like Shumba is because it's so busy now. Every day, it's commercial. The snags are getting worse because people are losing line and the line's becoming a snag. Yeah. You know, you've got line tethered up down there, and even wire got like that years ago. You know, the known snags that you want to be near just get worse. You know, obviously every year.
Yeah, because everyone's fishing to them, aren't they?
Exactly. So I'm guessing Shumba's a bit like that. But no, they're not too bad. It's nothing that would ever put me off. When I go there, I'm not thinking, shit, I need to take a load of extra gear because I'm going to lose a load of tackle. You don't think that at all. I mean, I did lose a couple of fish on one of the lakes last time, but it was like a very steep shelf and drop off, and I wasn't aware of it. Like after I'd had about 30 fish and lost three in a row after I'd had a load of fish, and Gasper said to me, oh, you didn't let him go. He saw it going to the right and I wasn't doing anything to stop him. He went, no, you've got to stop him going over there. I was like, why?
Yeah.
And then it locked up and then I lost the fish. I was like, oh, that's fine. But once I knew, but obviously, you know, we're going to tell you if there's anything like that. But most of them are fine. In fact,
pretty
all fine. And the good thing about Slovenia is you can use boats as well. So Croatia, you can't use boats. There's a lot of it's lot sort of longer range fishing. Whereas Slovenia, you can.
I think that's a national. Is that in some sort of national? Because I know you can't on Sumba unless for some reason when these people have it on a lake exclusive, it lets you use boats or bait boats. Certainly, but any other time, I think as a club they can't. They have to cast.
Yeah, it's a national rule in Croatia. Yeah, like I said, there may be exceptions if it's a private hire or something, but I don't think it's every lake, actually, because there's one lake. The lake I was on about is owned by a club, but they allow two people a week to fish it, who are sort of non-members. Obviously, it books up a couple of months in advance, that one, but I won't say the name of that one because I really fancy fishing it myself and I don't want to. I'm going to have a go. But apparently you can use boats on there. But the rule is you're not allowed to drop baits. It's only for finding a spot and feeding. Maybe they get an exception if it's a snaggy lake or something. Maybe there's some sort of you know, fish safety type thing. I've seen people out in boats on them. There's always a boat on the lake for like the club to do whatever, snag removal or whatever. But the anglers aren't. Whereas in Slovenia, you can find your spots, drop, you know, bait up. You just can't actually, you still got to cast. That's the rule.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite a sensible rule.
I think it's good for car fishing. I think it's good that all these lakes are coming to fruition and on all parts of the world, you know, everybody's, I think people are pushing the parameters they want to go or to travel or what the effort they're willing to do to put in to catch them. And it's only the same as like we used to do back in the day where you used to drive to Yateley to bait up and things like that. You know, I was never that keen, but from Blackpool to Yateley to bait up or from where, when you're fishing the Meres, you know, I wouldn't have even done that, but it's still, effort, isn't it? And then you see a lot of bitchiness on social media about why they don't matter from Europe or they don't count. And well, why then? If you're going to make the effort to research these places and go and travel and take the chance, why does that fish not deem to matter to some of the Keep It Real Brigade? You know, I just can't get my head around it.
The thing is, when you get over to Europe, and it's only once you've been, you find that their fish are just as desirable as ours. So you get chatting to guys, and they're all talking about this fish in that lake, just like we would be about, I don't know, about the big plated or whatever. It's like they're the same, and that makes you want to go, oh, does that fish live in that lake over there? Is it, oh, next year we'll come back and go to that lake and we'll have a go. You know, it's exactly the same, except I think their culture's a bit better. They've adapted. I don't know if it's because of the size of the lakes and the fact that there's more fish to go around or whatever. I don't know, but they seem to have a better attitude towards it than a lot of the English.
Well, it's not as much of a rat race as the UK because it's such a big continent, isn't it? That's why. There's enough to go around at the minute.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I think France has ended up like UK. You know, it's very commercial now. It's not as much as an adventure as it was 20 years ago. It's fairly clinical, isn't it? It's usually English owners, so you don't have to worry about speaking a different language or anything. And that's what I like about Slovenia, Croatia, is it's still an adventure, you know, and it's only just being talked about now. It's the very early stages as far as UK anglers fishing over there.
It was only through you. I'd heard of some, but before I was hearing you talking about the Balkans on the Carpcrest.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of it is coming to the table now, isn't it? It really is. But I still think you'll get a minority of people that won't want to either drive that far or perhaps be. But then you take that hassle away with the plane. I think you could say it's the future. I mean, how many more? Like you say, Belgium is pretty much not done to death. Germany, they're mainly syndicates where you can't get on. I mean, I was doing a lot of filming with for some of the new reels from Shimano. I went over to Holland with Alain Danu.
Yeah.
Who is just amazing. He's cool. Everybody knows him.
Yeah.
And he said that it's as much of a rat race there, certainly on syndicates, certainly some of the lakes in Belgium that have been blown out of the water when filming was done on those. He said it's carnage on there now. He said it's full all the time. The fish are under pressure. He said that it's getting as bad in areas of Europe that he fishes. And he really searches off the beaten track for some of his fish because he's kind of known as a European terrier, and he searches the fish out that he wants to catch. And he said there's parts of Germany that are the same, but certainly Belgium and Holland. He said because it's growing and growing, the carp fishing industry, it's becoming worse in Europe too. So I think people are just going to travel further into Europe, like you've done, to find what they want to fish for.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Even Austria, I mean, you went to Austria, you'll know that the lakes are fairly crowded there because I don't think they've got as many lakes over there. There's a lot of anglers, plus any lake that shows up with big fish, then it's so close to so many other carping countries, the Czech Republic, Hungary, you know, places that have got a lot of carpers. And that's what's happening. You've literally got to go as far as Slovenia, Croatia to start moving away. But the carping culture is pretty big over there now, and even further south in Serbia. And Bosnia, the fishing's big down there as well.
We were at Austria, the guy that runs the syndicate, he's very friendly with the mayor, conveniently. the mayor's two kids, or two teenage lads, fished.
Yep.
So they came down, the Chris, who owns the lake, they kind of bring them down to meet you. So they came down, and I'm thinking, oh, God, is it going to be like a rig tying session? And is it going to be? And I just caught... It was really hot that day, and I just put literally 2 minutes before they arrived in the scrum, I just put a mid-40 common back. So I'm sweating my balls off, and I'm like, bear in mind there's no shower at this lake, smelling like a skunk after 5 days. You can imagine me, I got through about a pallet full of baby wipes. And then these two guys turn up, and we're chatting, and they said, and they could see obviously the net was still dismantled, there's fish slime all over the net. They spoke really good English. They were really nice people. And so I'm sort of starting to go into tuition mode. And they said, oh, well, did you catch it on? And I said, I'll show you something now. It's a rig that's really sort of took off in the UK called the QC rig, or the Ronnie rig, as people call it. And they went, oh, yeah, we know that. I'm like, what? And so basically then I got all my rig stuff out of my bot, like my chods and Stiffins rigs and little wafter rigs and solid bikes. They knew everything. They knew everything about it because they just get everything off the internet, off YouTube.
It's the same in Slovenia, you would not imagine, but they're, I would draw a line in the sand and say that if you picked a random five Slovenians and a random five English anglers, the Slovenians would probably be more clued up. The gear's good over there. They know all the rigs. And I think they're just used to catching more. You know, they work harder with the spotting, spomming. They feed more regularly. I just think they understand carp a little bit better than we do.
Yeah, I was really impressed. They were so well-spoken, so polite. Really, really nice sort of teenage lads. Very religious. They were going from the lake to the grandmothers with the father to pay it. They were just really nice people. And then it really opened my eyes up to the fact that there is a lot more to carp fish. You know, I don't think those lakes that the Nash guys fished are too far away from the syndicate.
No.
That we fished.
No.
There's quite a lot of lakes around that area, gravel pits, and it was weird to see how the Austrians fish, because the lake we fish, I think it's a 10-man syndicate, and you buy your swim for the year. I think the swim is €3,000.
Wow.
For a swim, something like that, and you can split that between two of you. So it was €4,000. It was €2,000 each, or €4,000 on your own. You couldn't move. That's your swim for the year. Basically, we pulled onto this lake, and everybody's bivvies are up, and we're thinking, Jesus Christ, it's rammed. And there was two guys. We just leave the bivvies up. All the markers are out, permanent markers. They all fish.
That's clear crazy. Spots.
It's absolutely mad. And Chris said it's a tough lake. It's hard lake. Some people catch two or three in a season.
Wow. Well,
and then we saw them fish, and you can. And they said, oh, they're really spooky boats and stuff like that. And I was just fishing. I was getting out of the boat with my Echo. As the Echo rose up, I'd have a little donk with the lead, because it was quite a lot of silt in the lake, or sort of really sort of soft, low-lying weed from the year before. And I'd find a slightly shallower area, donk with the lead. If it was hard or a firm sort of sandy spot, kilo bait over the side back. So I'd get three rods out in 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and we were just fishing where we saw fish, Jamie. We didn't think it was that difficult. It's the anglers that made it difficult.
It's funny what you said about the underwater cameras, because that the other lakes that Nashie went to, I fished that lake for 4 or 5 days last year as well. After they did on part of our trip, and same on there, they've all got these underwater cameras. I mean, that is a tricky lake. That the one with the big fish in, well, they've all got big fish to like 50s and 60s, but the one that's got the really big fish in, up to 90 pound, is really tough. I think there was two fish out while we were there, and most of the swims are full, so it wasn't an option to move or anything. But they're all looking for these like tiny little depressions in the silt with these underwater cameras, and it opened my eyes. Like, everybody had one. We were at a definite disadvantage by not having one.
See, we thought we were an advantage by not having one, because we just fished. We were seeing them fizzing. We were just fishing. As you would in the UK, you fish, but you were limited because you were in his two swims. And like, you could quite easily have boated a rod up to somebody else's marker pole, but we were guests. That isn't the dumb thing. But I said to Chris, he learned a lot from me and Smithy as English anglers.
Yeah,
because he couldn't believe that we'd caught seven each in a week.
Yeah,
and he was amazed at it. And we were sort of trying to get across to him, without being disrespectful, obviously, that the reason why people are saying to us they're spooky of the boats is because everybody makes each other paranoid, because they're all out. The one guy that ended up cutting me off, who was in we were at the southern end of the lake. The lake was basically rectangular shape, and there was another swim. The next swim up from me was about 100 yards away.
Yeah,
he turned up on the Friday and then proceeded to go out in his boat and spent 3 hours donking his underwater camera around, looking at his spots, because he'd been to bait up in the week. Every single swim when we were there got baited in the week.
Yeah,
and then what they do, they'll come back and some will bait again, but they don't just bait. They'll drop the camera down to see how much bait's gone.
Yeah,
but this guy was out there 3 hours checking his spots, you know, and he was checking his spots. And then he put a load more bait in. Well, that's surely telling me that the fish had been in and at his bait. So why didn't he put loads out and then fish for 3 nights? Well, why didn't he just put a a kilo out and try and get a bite. The fish had obviously visited his spots because they were passing through his area or through his zone to get to me, and I was picking them off over small amounts of bait. I mean, like we even said to Chris, if you take 8 decent anglers back to that lake in Austria for a week and fishy English style, you would smash it to bits. Well, not smash it to bits because it's a tough lake, but you would catch a lot of fish. And there's a lot of 25 kilo plus fish in there. Because they just fish it on their terms with minimum disturbance, not donking these cameras around, not overbaiting. So that side of it we thought was quite poor from that syndicate. I'm not saying all the Austrian anglers are like that, but we found that particular syndicate where I think they've made each other paranoid. I really do.
I think it's the old adage that we always go on about is fish differently to the norm. It doesn't matter what the norm is, but do the opposite because the fish get conditioned. So if everyone's fishing that, maybe it's just the fact that they know they're getting fish for at the weekend and the bait's free during the week. They can eat the bait all week long and not worry about it. You know, maybe it's just the times that people fish. They get used to routines,
don't they? We planned our trip. So we basically left Stoke on Saturday evening so we could drive all through Europe and through Germany and down through Austria on a Sunday. So it was quieter. And so we stayed in a hotel on the Sunday night on the basis that we thought, well, the weekend anglers, whilst it's not a busy syndicate, will potentially have gone.
Yeah.
And so from Monday to Friday, it was us against the fish. Okay, people were coming and baiting up. But then as soon as that extra pressure, because they were all using 4 rods, we were using 3 each. As soon as that extra boat activity and all these cameras had been smashed around on these spots on the bottom, the lake went on lockdown, complete lockdown. Me or Smith, he didn't catch another fish. I think there was one guy at the top end who caught a fish, and that was it. They knew straight away.
I remember, I've got loads of examples of that. I remember Horseshoe in the early days, sort of pre-carp society. It'd have 60 bivvies on at the weekend, and you'd come down on a Monday. It'd fish rubbish on the Monday, and on Tuesday it'd start fishing, like right up till Friday when everybody turned up. And I always remember Elstow 1, that was on a rota basis, and there was a changeover on Friday. And then literally as soon as the midweekers reeled in on the Friday morning, everybody used to fish hemp and pellet on there, so when the fish got on the spot you saw the massive sort of slick come up,
bleeding up.
And literally 5 minutes after everybody reeled in, this happened every single week without fail, 5 minutes after everybody reeled in, the lake had gone mental. All the spots in front of all the swims would start slicking up like crazy, and the fish knew. They knew they had a safe period of a few hours while everybody had to pull off, the next lot of people arrived, and then there was a draw. So there was like a 3-4 hour window maybe where they knew it was safe to eat. And every single week that happened, like the whole lake is there. That was just a timing thing, a routine. They knew the routine.
And I guess it's like the changeover day in France, which is normally between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m, isn't it? I would imagine the same happens on a lot of lakes in France because they know that's their safe time. They can go around and have a bit of a feed. There's nobody going to be fishing. They know. They just get accustomed. We teach them how to behave almost, don't we? That we pressurize them into doing things they probably wouldn't naturally do.
Without a doubt, they're conditioned by us, you know, which is why it's nice to go to a wild lake or somewhere a bit out the way, because fish act like fish do, and it becomes you against them as opposed to you against angling pressure.
I mean, I've been a midweek angler for years, but even now, the advantage of being a midweek angler isn't nowhere near what it was 10, 12 years ago. That's the table has swung again, you know. So as much as I can fish in the week, and now I choose to fish in quieter areas or quieter syndicates, I would hate to be a weekend. I know a lot of people are weekend anglers that do go to day ticket compo, whether it's Linear or Lynch, and that's what they do because that's their life. They work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And I think it's just going to get harder and harder and harder over the years because so many more people are coming into the sport, which is great. You know, I'm not knocking people coming into the sport. We embrace it. But it's just putting the fish under more and more pressure into it all the time.
Yeah, what I used to find as well in the last few years is the more sort of, the bigger the fish in the syndicate, or the more exclusive the syndicate was, the more serious anglers were on there. So the midweeks would often be busier than the weekends because the pleasure anglers are on at the weekends, and all the serious guys like us were on Monday to Friday, and the weekends used to fish better than the midweek because you've just got a group of really keen.
Welly, when I went back to Welly in 2000, I did one more season in 2013, and Ian Stott was on there. Well, he still is on there, and he was always giving. Like, it was always banter, but he got all the excuses why he wasn't catching on the weekend. You know, he went through the moon phase. Yeah. He went through the fact the pressure, you know, the air pressure was high. All these excuses, and then his final one was, well, you fish midweek. I'm like, Stottie, don't give me that, because it's just as busy midweek as it is at weekends.
Yeah.
Because all the people are tailoring, they're paying $2,000 a ticket, they're tailoring their lifestyle around their fishing.
Yeah.
I think the only time I really benefited from when I fished midweek was on Frimley, and that was actually 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because it was you had to be a bay leaf or you had to have a gold card to fish tonight, and it was absolutely deserted on Frimley.
Yeah.
At night, it was heaven, and it was pleasurable fishing. Now Frimley will be just as busy as any other syndicate. You know, it's got lots of big fish, and that midweek advantage is gone. And also, I always look at. I remember times when I used to fish on St. John's, and when nobody could cast more than 100 yards, 100 yards was a long way. And yeah. Now, as the gear's got better and technology's come on and people's learning ability has got on, even casting a long way, or there's not a lot of advantage anymore. People, there's so many good anglers out there, far better than me, who are keener to learn. They'll go that extra mile. They'll purposely practice casting at long range if they need to. That they're so hungry to catch the carp that any advantage now, I always feel that I've got, yeah, there's little tweaks and rigs, and obviously I think the advantage now for me is getting on lakes where you can sort of fish on your own terms. That's how I feel.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly it. Well, we've been chatting an hour. Just quickly before we go, people, what do you use for chucking line?
I use 12-pound Shimano Black Technium
for
chucking line with a leader.
Seems to be what we had Mark Barlett on last week and Kyle Pitcher the week before. I'm sure they said Technium as well. So it seems to be
what I use. I'm shit at casting anyway. So I prefer to fish at 40 yards and use fluorocarbon.
Well, I hope we get time to catch up and fish. I don't think we've fished on the same lake in...
No, we haven't for years. No, ever even, in fact, I don't think. But we will.
Maybe on a match or something. I don't know. I can't think now.
I know where we're fishing together.
Go on.
We will be fishing together in the Balkans, 100%.
fantastic. You'll like Gasper as well. He's a funny guy. So
brilliant.
Just hang on there a sec, because I've got some other questions. But thank you for joining the Carpcast.
Cheers, Jamie.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
Thank you to Ian. Always a pleasure to talk to him, and it's quite nice that we ended up speaking about my trips next year. So I'm sure that will have whetted the appetite. I had a chat with Ian after the show. He's definitely coming. He's got himself some dates together for next year. Looking forward to that. Something else Ian's doing. He does these Night of Carps in the winter, doesn't he? He hires a venue up near him, which happens to be Florence Sports Club in Stoke-on-Trent, Lightwood Road, Longton, Stoke. Have a look on his page and stuff to be able to find that. But yeah, he's got Dave Lane this winter. It's £10 entry. exclusive availability of Fine Lines, which is Dave Lane's new book. There'll be some trade stands there. There's always a few bargains at these things. Fancy it, Mark? Trip to Stoke for a night out, a night of cart with Dave Lane?
That could quite possibly happen. They do talk a bit funny down there, but yeah, it could quite possibly happen, because who doesn't want to see a Dave Lane two-part slideshow? He's inspiring stuff, and he catches for fun. He puts the rest of us to shame, and we can all learn from that.
It's the week after the Northern Anglia show. Northern Anglia show's on the 24th, 25th of Feb, and this is the 3rd of March, so it's the following Saturday. Doors open 6:30 p.m. with a late bar. Shout out to Ian for putting that on. He's had some good guests over the years, used his contacts very well. I did see a quick Worth a Look, actually.
Worth a Look.
Mark, I've not watched it yet, whilst I'm aware of the content, because... it's probably 4 weeks ago now. Reedy, who works with us on Northern Anglia show, one of the owners, he was on Rainbow, and he said, "Oh, Crowe and Ollie Davis are on Rainbow as well." They're on the other side of the lake from him. He was on the island swim, and I remember Ollie Davis catching a whacker of a comment on one of the days, because Reedy ran me up. Anyway, there is now a film of it, and it was released last night, as Nash tend to do on Fridays, on the Nash TV page on YouTube, or I guess if you go to the Nash page as well, you'll be able to watch it. So I'm going to settle down to that in a little bit. Ollie Davis's filming skills, photography skills are always fantastic. I think the Nash lads are one of the market leaders in film content and editing. I do think theirs are some of the best. We saw a good one from ESP last week, so Terry Hearn, but Nash do a fantastic job of these, and as I said, they are certainly stand out as one of the best.
Have you ever fancied fishing Rainbow, that sort of hook and haul 80 pounder style fishing?
Yes and no. I think I spoke about it before, like size wise Rainbow's peaked, and a lot of the fish I've seen on Rainbow, they seem to be quite tatty. I mean, it comes with the cost of dragging fish out of a super snaggy lake on extremely tough tackle, 100 pound braid and all sorts of crazy stuff, and a lot of the fish I've seen, they don't excite me anymore, to be honest. They're a lot of them look like they've been in the wars. And add to that, I think it peaked size-wise a good few years ago now.
Do you know, if a fish was like that over in here, over in England, we'd just call it a character and we'd all want to catch it.
I think they are characters. I definitely think they are characters, but I don't know. So I'm not saying I would say no to if I got offered a trip on there, but the fish are pretty much similar sizes in Slovenia and Croatia now. They've got similar sort of stocks without all that towing behind the back of islands and all that really super crazy snaggy stuff. Without all that, and they're on the up, they've not peaked, and not peaked for, they're not going to peak for a couple of years yet. So if I've got 2 weeks spare, I would rather be fishing somewhere else than Rainbow now, I think. Whereas Rainbow was the place to go if you had an opportunity, whereas I think... don't get me wrong, it seems interesting, all those bottle rigs and all the crazy stuff that they do. Yeah. It does. It'd be another string to your bow, but I think I prefer the Balkans.
Right, we're saying maybe past its peak. It's all relative, because there is still a lot of absolutely monstrous fish in there.
Yeah, but the big ones seem to be dying. They have lost a couple, and I think there's only 2 80 pounders in there now.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, but there's a lot of lakes in France that have 80 pounders. A number of the Slovenian lakes do as well. We saw Dave Levy catch an 88 pounder a few weeks back on Shumba. There are other 80s knocking about over there, and they're growing so fast. On the VIP site, I put details of the fish sizes of that we expected for next spring on the website. Obviously, I've been working on the website a lot over the last few months. Anyway, I spoke with Gaspar on the phone a couple of nights ago, and they've already exceeded what we predicted for next year. like already, and it's only November. So they're growing absolutely crazy. The lake that Drew and I did the 2-hour live stream from, where we had a few fish, I forget what that lake had in at the time. I think it had 2 70-pounders in it. Anyway, it's done 5 already this winter. This November, which is crazy. The rates that they're growing, the conditions are just perfect. And like I said, there's no ceiling on what can happen over there. I think the water quality is better than France. You know, a lot of the fish are fed by the river. A lot of the lakes are fed by the river Sava, which is an amazing river. So it's like the water's getting filtered constantly. They've got perfect temperatures to feed in. They've got a couple of really cold months every year where the fish shut down. It's just perfect. So I think that is the part of the world to be in, I think. And it's fairly untapped by UK anglers, whereas France has been hammered. So, but anyway, yeah, enough Croatia and Slovenia fishing. We spoke about it a lot of this show. But, check out Nash TV. Something else, a little bit of gossip that one of our listeners told me the other day, talking about French fishing and stuff. You know the guy that caught the 82-pounder from Wingham last week?
Yeah.
I heard a rumour that he had the scarfish at the world record weight, that 99-pound from Graviers is sadly now dead scarfish. But yeah, this guy could possibly have held the world record and the biggest ever fish in Britain, albeit spawn bound, which if true, that's crazy little fact.
Yeah, some people have just got it. I like to catch them spawned out.
I know. I'm guessing if this British record fish committee applied the same rules to world fishing, then none of the Euro aquafish would count. I mean, that lake, it's not just fed, it's fed while you're fishing. When you go for your breakfast in the morning, the guy's out there with a barrel. I don't mean a bin, I mean a barrel of maize going into your swim.
I've just been scrolling through down Dave Moore's Facebook, you know, the old Yorkshire man. I believe he's just been out fishing in Hungary as well while you were talking. I thought I'd have a look, and he doesn't post fairly regular, to be honest, but there is a picture out of him on Euro Aqua. He's on it's like a flat thing. There's a fella, presumably the owner or a bailiff of the boat, sat behind it with an engine, and there's 3 big blue barrels, and there's a little caption at the top saying just a bit of the bait you need for Hungary.
Yeah, it gets poured in every day over your spots, and I think you have to fish to his markers where he puts the bait, and it all sounds a bit crazy. But, I mean, again, that is as artificial as it comes. Those fish are like...
Oh. Yeah, if you want an expose of that one, go back to listen to another Ian McMillan interview. Episode it was, but...
Yeah, we did a lot of talking about Eureka when it first did the world record. But, I mean, basically, if you don't know, it's about as artificial as a lake could possibly be. If you want to go fish there, fantastic. Go fishing's for enjoyment. Go and enjoy your fishing. Not trying to put anybody off. But certainly none of those fish would meet this new British record fish committee stipulation.
I do remember a while back on the... I don't know which world record claim it was... But there were, I don't know if it was denied or what, I can't remember, but there was problems with the claim because it was caught on a hair rig and the bait wasn't actually mounted on the hook.
I remember that, yeah.
So if you think we've got problems.
Yes, well, probably a good spot to be leaving this on. So I think it's time to say our goodbyes, and we'll be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
Be seeing you. Simply, simply lovely.
Check out the website at www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.